Right. Hello, everybody. So today we are going to be talking with Dr. Elisa Jiang. She is an ophthalmologist, an oculoplastic surgeon, and a certified life coach. She is currently coaching people on their paths towards financial independence. So she is at growyourwealthymindset.com. And we wanted to chat with her today about kind of her path and how she became a coach and get some good financial mindset going for today's podcast. And just a little background on her, she started investing in 2004, 2005, and started really getting into real estate investing in 2008. And some side notes, she's kind of amazing. She's climbed Kilimanjaro and run marathons and overall travels constantly all over the world. And I love seeing all these pictures. So welcome and thank you so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course, of course. Okay, so let's delve right in. Can you give us a little bit about like your background, your specialty, how long you've been doing all this, and like kind of what led you to mindset coaching?
So, as you already said, I started learning on how to invest back in 2004-ish. Maybe even earlier, I started learning first about personal finance, and then that led into learning about investing. So at that point, I was in medical school. I did an MD PhD program, which on average takes 8 years. And I did that in Cleveland, Ohio, which has a relatively low cost of living. So a lot of MD PhD students, especially those who are married, and I did get married young. So I was married at the time, will actually buy their own primary residence because even though we were paid $20,000 a year back then, you could actually get a mortgage on
Right.
$20,000 a year. And so just in learning all the different mortgage products, because of course that's what led to the 2008 financial crisis.
Right.
But like just learning about the different financial products and getting a mortgage to actually buy a house, that's what first got me interested in personal finance. So I started researching all that and learning all that, and then just branching out into learning about personal finance and then again learning into investing. And it was kind of really eye-opening. So the first time I would say that I experienced burnout in retrospect was actually during the graduate portion of my MD PhD program. I
Oh,
had
okay.
a PI that was very much a micromanager, and to the point where when I was doing experiments, I would listen to music and he's like, "Well, that's distracting." So then I got an
Wow.
MP3 player. And so I listened with my headphones and he's like, "That's still distracting." And I'm like, "Distracting who? No one else can hear it." And
Right.
he's like, "Well, right?" And he's like, "Well, it's distracting you from doing research." I was like, "Dead silence is distracting."
Yeah.
I mean, I was in a room by myself doing patch clamp recording from individual cells on a microscope. Like it was literally a little closet of like this rig and a computer. And you just heard kind of like the staticky voices of like electronics. I was like, I will go crazy if I don't have some
Right.
kind of other sound to listen to.
Yeah.
So that was just kind of the flavor of grad school. And so that's when I really was also still learning about this. Pivoted my thought process at that point because that's where I really started having the concept of like, okay, I do not want to work for a boss forever. Like, what can I do? And they talk of Robert Kiyosaki talks about the cash flow quadrant being employed or self-employed, and most of us fall into that as
Yes.
physicians and podiatrists. We're typically self-employed versus being a business owner and being an investor. And so that's when I really started being like, okay, I need to invest for my financial freedom. I understand as a physician, when I'm working as a physician, I'm still kind of on the employed or self-employed side, but I want to use the money I make as a physician and grow my wealth. At that point, I was really thinking more from being an investor standpoint, but also as a private practice owner, you can turn yourself from self-employed to being a business owner as well.
Yeah, and I think that's such a if anybody hasn't read that book yet, like that quadrant is just hugely impactful. And I think that's such a great thing to pay attention to is like, the self-employed thing, it really kind of just you're creating a job for yourself and it's not it's it tends to be actually more work. But being able to get into that business owner status, that's I agree, that's what I try to help my clients getting into. So, and then, with burnout, if you wouldn't mind talking about that a little bit more. What do you feel like were kind of some of the symptoms where you were like, yeah, this might actually be like a burnout situation?
Yeah, it was the not loving going in any day or not even liking it, kind of dreading it. I will say I also experienced burnout as a physician. So when I was sitting in my car, like in the parking lot, being like, okay, what's the last minute I can walk in and not be late? Right? Like that kind of feeling, right? And so for me, burnout wasn't about like, oh, I'm working so hard, I'm working so many hours, I'm so exhausted. But there was a feeling of mental exhaustion in that, like, I just feel like a cog in the wheel. I feel like I have no voice. I feel like whenever I try to change anything, like everything just gets thrown back on me. I feel like I'm doing things that, really are, I don't want to say below my pay grade, but kind of something that someone else, like I could do it, but this is not what I'm really being paid for. This is not using my time to the best of what value I can really bring.
Right, what your training was even. And I mean, that's, I think burnout looks so different for everybody, and it's a little bit like, the symptoms are a little bit kind of, I don't know, sneaky, right? Like it's like a slow build usually, and then it's like you kind of have that moment of, yep, I'm probably flirting with burnout. This is not ideal. Like, I don't know if I can, keep doing it for very long. No, thank you for sharing that. And then, when did you decide you were really going to kind of go all in on this, FIRE movement? And can you talk a little bit about FIRE? I'm sure a lot of people kind of have heard this before, but it's nice to, hear details about what it is and like how that maybe can like look for physicians.
Yeah, so FIRE stands for Financial Independence Retire Early. And that was the path I kind of paved. Even I hadn't even heard the word FIRE until years later, but after reading Rich Dad Poor Dad, I made a financial plan. Okay, as a physician, once I become an attending, I should be able to have an income of at least, I think at the time I said 200,000. And how much do I need to save and invest? And how long will it take for me to get to a point where I can live off my assets, live off my investments? And I knew that I wasn't going to wait till 65 to get to that point. So doing the MD PhD, I definitely added some years, but I also didn't have debt, so that was helpful. I also spent a year doing research before going to med school, so there's that extra time range. And I think I was even making this plan before I knew how long of a residency or fellowship I would be doing, because I hadn't applied or matched or anything at that point. So I just kind of said, okay, by 55, I definitely want to be able to just walk away from working at all at that point. And earlier is better. And
I love that.
so that just meant, okay, how much do I have to start investing in terms of percentage of income, but also in terms of like actual amount in order to get to the point where I could just live off a stock and bond portfolio, which at that point, a safe withdrawal rate, they talk about 4%. Some people say that's a little high, some people say that's a little low. That was really calculated out as having your portfolio last for 30 years. But of course, if I'm retiring early with our long life expectancies, I need that to last more than 30 years. So I kind of used like a 3.5% rate, which is considered a little safer. And that's just stocks and bonds. But then I started to get involved in real estate investing, which can bring you cash flow while you own the asset. So the thing about stocks and bonds is, in order to get cash flow, you're typically going to sell off some of your stocks and bonds in order to do that. But with real estate, you can actually own the property and you rent it out and you're getting positive cash flow in. And so you still own the asset while you have income coming in from that. So that's what really inspired me to go after doing more real estate investing. And so I started doing that after the kind of crash with real estate. I bought a house that was foreclosed on, like it was bank owned, rehabbed it and flipped it. So I did that while I kind of took some time off between when I finished my graduate school portion and when I restarted up in third year. And originally, like flipping it doesn't necessarily give you long-term cash flow, but at the time I actually put, gosh, I think it was 18,000. It was a lot of money on credit cards in order to pay for courses to learn how to do real estate investing.
He went all in.
Right. So I had to flip it so that I had money to pay that back. But it gave me a taste of like, I can do this. And I will say that I went back to med school, so I did two flips at that time, and I was trying to do like some other things. But I kind of was like, okay, I can do this. It taught me that I can do this, but it's much easier when you have capital. So I was like, okay, as soon as I become an attending and I really have capital, then we're gonna go hard at it.
And so, for a lot of your clients that, that you're coaching, I'm assuming a lot of them do have, pretty substantial student loan debt. How would you recommend that they work towards getting that kind of a capital if, say, they did want to get into real estate investing or some other, large capital upfront type of investing?
Yeah, so one thing about real estate investing, I have learned it is possible to do it without any money, actually, but it takes a lot more legwork to do that. And so when I was in grad school, I was doing that legwork and, it worked out. But again, there's still money that I invested kind of into my education. So as, attending, yes, we have loans. And so there are different ways to battle loans. There's the PSLF route, if, depending on what your background is and how many years of training, sometimes that can work out really well for people, especially if they don't mind being in a kind of academic nonprofit setting. Or there's the, okay, you pay off your loans in the long run, but you still save and invest, and just putting more portion size of your income into your investments. And, your investment into your private practice is also an investment. So, you do have to think about all the different type of investments you want to do. If you're starting your private practice, then maybe you want to actually think about purchasing like an office building for your private practice, but you're probably not going to start your private practice, buy your own office building, and be buying like long-term rental properties or short-term rental properties. Like you do have to
Don't want you to overextend yourself too much
focus,
right out the
right?
gate.
Yeah, so you're gonna have to focus, but the White co-investor is kind of famous for saying like live like a resident, and I do hear a lot of pushback from physicians like, well, I've already been living,
They're tired of
I've been right, they're
it.
tired of it, right? They deferred gratification for so long that they're like, I want all the things. But I will say, the less you can inflate your lifestyle, like the more you can build your wealth. And I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, I don't know. I actually love residency and fellowship. It's not like I'm happier now than I was at times of my residency and fellowship, right? I mean, are you that much happier now than you were when you were in undergrad, right? In undergrad, you didn't even have income, right? You lived on loans, or you have money from your parents, right? So it's not about how much income you're making that's going to create your happiness. And so if you can create happiness with living on a little less of your income so that you can put more of it towards investing, then just know that, yes, I don't want to say like you're delaying gratification for later, but you're building a financial future later, but you can still enjoy life now without spending every penny that you have now.
Yeah, no, I think that's really great. And that is the case. It's really easy to just like elevate your lifestyle up to what your new income is. And I think that does get people kind of stuck a little bit. And in some cases, I know clients that we have to talk about, okay, how do we actually decrease your expenses? How do we backtrack a little bit out of this so that you have, that extra $500, you have that extra $1,000 to be able to put these into investments for yourself and be able to, put into something that you might want to do at a later time. It is harder to back out of that mentally, I would say, but it is doable.
And a lot of happiness is about our expectations, right? So if we can temper our expectations a little bit, right? So when people talk about the doctor house, and some people want to drive like a really nice car. We, you know, Paula Pant is famous for saying like, you can afford anything, but you can't afford everything. I really like that, right?
Oh, interesting.
Yes, you can have a doctor house, you can have a beautiful house, but maybe that means you're not driving a Mercedes and sending your kids to private school and, X, Y, and, traveling to Europe every year. Like there are going to be things that you need to choose, and it doesn't mean that you can't have nice things, but you can have some nice things. You can't have all the nice things, right? Because there's so much consumerism that even if you had millions and even billions of dollars, I mean, maybe at billions you could have quote everything,
Maybe.
but there are billionaires who are still unhappy. So again, it's not the money that buys happiness. Example that at some point, if your expectations go higher and higher, then you won't necessarily be able to meet those expectations. And not meeting expectations is really, I think, the core root of unhappiness.
Yeah, I would agree. I think managing the expectations is probably the biggest thing. So, I mean, that kind of leads into like, what do you find are like the most common mindset blocks for physicians? Is it that like expectation management? Are there other things that you find are like really commonly a problem for people to get through when it comes to like, money and managing their finances?
I think one thing about like the whole physician lifestyle is something that many people come across of like the feeling like, well, I should be able to have a nice house and I should be able to drive a nice car. And, everyone else in my neighborhood's kids go to private school and that kind of living up to the Jones
Yeah, keep it
or
up with the Joneses.
yeah,
Yeah.
keeping up with the Jones.
Yep.
And I don't think we physicians think about that from a conscious perspective, but
Sure.
physicians do make a huge range in income, right? Anywhere between $150,000 a year to $1 million a year. And yes, if you've got an income of $1 million a year, then what you can spend on is going to be a lot more than if you've got an income of $150,000 a year. And
Yeah.
yes, if you've got two physicians who are making $300,000-$400,000 each, that's going to be a little different. If you have one physician making $300,000 or $400,000 and the other person is a stay-at-home spouse or a spouse who's making less than $100,000 or closer to that $100,000 range, right? And but again, more money is not going to bring more happiness. So if you expect to live like a physician who's making $1 million a year, but you're making $200,000 a year, that is going to be a setup for you to be unhappy with your current position. And
Right.
of course, also, where you live does have some impact. If you're in high cost of living area, if you're in the Bay Area and you're living in like Silicon Valley, and now you're not even comparing yourself to physicians, right? You're comparing
Right.
yourself to like
Like
startups
tech
who
moguls, yeah. Yeah, different game. Yeah.
So, I think it is looking at, okay, what do I really value? What is going to bring me joy? And what am I doing because I feel like I'm entitled to it, or I thought this is what I should have had. And really kind of breaking that down.
Yeah. In terms of, I think the personal finances part is such a big part of it too. But a lot of practice owners, because I mean, this, we get zero financial training. I mean, yours was all self-taught too. So, we don't get any like real business training prior to coming out. I mean, all your training is so focused on how to practice medicine, as it should be. But more and more, I feel like the medical schools and the residency programs are cutting back on their business education and their financial education. And I mean, what would you, if you had to give some tips to practice owners for like their business finances, like how to get a handle on those things, like where would you start? How do you work with people on that part of it?
Before I answer your question, I will say, if you think about the whole medical training, what are they really incentivized for and who's paying for it, right?
Right.
Hospitals used to be a place where physicians, they got privileges and but they were still independent, and the hospitals needed to recruit physicians to send patients there in order to, get the money from the testing or
Yeah.
when patients are inpatients. Like hospitalists, the whole job of a hospitalist actually came around during my training process. Before that, it was attendings went to go see their patients in the hospital, so hospitals had to woo attending
Physicians.
physicians to
Yeah.
actually come there. Whereas now hospitals are just employing
Yeah.
physicians, and then now they want to quote own you.
Right.
And trainees are typically in hospitals, so they want to teach even as a trainee. Like, oh, they want to teach that employee mindset.
Yeah.
You're going to work for us, and we're going to tell you what to do, as
Yep.
opposed to,
Yep.
oh, we need to woo you and have things like doctor's lounges and free food
Right.
and give you all these
Right.
things so that you come to us,
Right.
right? It's totally changed. So
Yeah.
a lot of times you want to, I mean, it kind of in everything, you want to think, what are the incentives? And that's going to tell you a lot.
Yeah. No, I
So
agree
that
with
being
you.
said,
Yeah.
yeah. So that being said, learning our own financial learning on finances and treating, even if you're not a private practice owner, even if you are an employee and you want to be an employee, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but you need to treat your household as essentially like a business. And what cash flow is coming in from your income, but then what are you going to do in your household in order to build your wealth so that you do not have to keep working forever? Or, hopefully you actually enjoy what you do, but maybe you would enjoy doing it part time. Maybe you would
Right.
enjoy doing it at other situation where you're not actually paid as much, but it doesn't matter because you're getting income from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So really try to pay attention to how can You bring in more income from other places other than you trading your time for money.
Yeah, I think it's such a framework shift too, to be able to know that you have income coming in from other sources and you're able to go into your job, even if you're still in an employed position, to be like, I don't have to be here. Like, I can do this today because this is what I want to be doing, because this is my passion, this is where I'm supposed to be. But you know that you have the option. It doesn't have quite the same pressures on it as, oh God, I have to be in here. I have to do this so many days a week. I have to take so many extra shifts because otherwise I won't pay my loans. Like, if it's your only source coming in, I think it just adds such an additional stress. And you're right. Unfortunately, with the way corporate medicine has gone, it's not exactly in the favor of the physician to maintain a, a happy work-life balance. Like, they really don't care particularly if you're in, in a good mind frame, as long as you're getting the stuff done, right? So I do think that definitely has shifted. But what a great way to be able to go into work, every day. You're like, I'm here because I want to be. It's such a novel concept. So
And some of it is has I mean you might think like, oh, it has everything to do with how I'm treated at work, but it has a lot to do with how you think you're being treated and how that's affecting you. And sometimes if you can just shift some of it, then I mean that can make a big difference in when you are in the workplace.
And then what advice would you give these doctors that are considering like other completely unrelated income streams, whether it's, stocks and real estate? Like, what advice would you give them on like, where to start? Like, how do you get started in any of this?
So I'd like to start by saying that no one has to do alternative investments. You could just do index fund investing, stocks and bonds, and meet your financial goals. And it will take time to get there, maybe more time than other kind of investments, but it is possible to get there that way.
And it's really
I've been
passive
criticized
that
in the
way, at
past.
least, which is helpful
Yes,
for a
it
lot
is
of
really
people,
passive
right?
that way. Yeah, I've been criticized in the past for toting investments that are inappropriate. I mean, as physicians, we are smart people, and including, of course, podiatrists in that group, and we can figure it out. And so if you can figure out different investments and that works for you, then it's not an inappropriate investment. So I talked about real estate a little earlier. There are so many ways to invest in real estate, right? You can do direct active investing. So buying a single family house, buying a duplex or quadplex, or even buying like a small apartment units. There are some apartments that are like 15 units or 30 units. I mean, it is possible to actually purchase that. There was one, I think, 14 unit kind of apartment complex that I had put an offer in that was in the $500,000 range, right?
Wow,
So
really?
yeah, I know. It's Ohio, so this is
Okay,
why.
okay. I'm out here on the West Coast. I'm like, wait, what?
I know it's Ohio, right? This is why a lot of out-of-state investors do come to Ohio,
Makes sense.
and why. And after my first job, when I was like, okay, we're going back to Ohio because real estate investing there way better. But that's the realm of possibility. I mean, you don't have to live in Ohio; you could invest in Ohio. So you do long-term rentals like that. You can also do short-term rentals, what people call like Airbnb. You can. I mean, your medical office, I mean, that's essentially commercial space. And you could have a building that's your medical office and that's it. Or you could have a building that you buy and your medical office practices there. But, then you have other office space for other physicians or, maybe other things that are like aligned to it, like a yoga instructor or
Physical
a
therapy
massage parlor,
groups. Yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. No, and I think that's a really, really cool way to look at it too. And granted, we're not financial advisors, CPAs, and I would recommend people talk to their CPA about this, but there are also like tax benefits too, to actually, essentially paying your office's rent as like your mortgage. So there's definitely some really good benefits to doing that kind of thing, that I think is important for people to look into. That's fabulous. So
Yeah, there are
what,
definitely a lot of tax advantages in investing in real estate.
You got depreciation, all this other stuff. So, with your clients that you work with on them getting, kind of this path forward towards financial independence, how do you go about coaching clients? What's your process usually?
Yeah, so usually there's an intake where we just do a free consultation. We talk about what the goals of the client who's coming to is, and it's been kind of all over the place. But in terms of building a financial plan, so I've had clients where they just got their loans forgiven, and now they're like, now what do I do with my money? I was
Right.
using all of it, or they just paid off their loans, and they were saying like, I just used all of it, paid off my loans, and now that I paid off my loans, I don't know what to do with it. I've actually had people even like, I am in the process of trying to figure out how to pay off my loans and just coaching them through getting them through the PSLF process. So I've had people who are like, okay, I've got a good nest egg in stocks and bonds. I have plenty invested there. I really want to branch out to something else. I don't want to keep putting more into the stock market. And then we coach on all the different ways to invest and talk about kind of pros and cons and go into what their time horizon is, what their financial goals are, what their risk tolerance is. And then we start diving just kind of more into, yeah, are they wanting to do real estate? With real estate, do they want to do active or passive? Or are they wanting to kind of like look into venture capital or investing in private equity or investing in, I don't know. I mean, just do they want to start their own like hobby slash side gig? I mean, there are many ways to do it.
No, that's fabulous. Yeah. And that's such a needed service. And we'll go ahead and make sure that we put onto the, onto our post and on the email the growyourwealthymindset.com so people know how to get a hold of you. And then, I appreciate so much you being here. And I always want to ask people, and I'm going to start doing this more regularly for our listeners, but if you could recommend a book or two that were pretty impactful for you, that really helped with kind of your business or your real estate education, what books would you recommend to listeners?
Yeah, so on my website, I do have one page where I have a lot of books I recommend. But I will say I somewhat recently listened to the audiobook for The Psychology of Money, Timeless Lessons on Wealth, Greed, and Happiness by Morgan Housel. And in listening to it, I thought like, oh, this might be my new favorite book to recommend to people because it really goes into the mindset of money and really talks about like everything from like how the population is to what determine like what has built the mindset of each individual. And he talks a little bit about like how much you do actually need to invest or should invest and why. But it's not really so much a book on the nitty-gritty aspects of investing, but really more about kind of just the whole mindset behind investing and money and finances.
Yeah, that sounds like an amazing place to start. 'Cause yeah, if you're not in the right mindset for some of this stuff, I think it's really, really hard to get started, to be honest. So
Yeah.
fabulous. Okay. Well, thank you so much. We so appreciate you being here with us. And then is the website an okay way for people to reach out and get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's perfect. So there's a
Contact me there. You can get on my email list. You can set up a Zoom call. So all the links Beautiful.
are there.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.